Well, good evening. Welcome back once again to One Step Beyond. The next 3 hours between 11 o'clock, with the exception of occasional musical breaks, are going to consist of documentation, information being read into the air. I think what I'm going to do with tonight's archive show is enter it into the archives both as yet another addendum to the original December surprise broadcast, Radio Free America 35, as it came to be. I am also going to enter this, I think, as a miscellaneous archive show, the Gander Newfoundland Crash. That's what I think at this point. It will certainly be in the archives. I will powwow with Paul from Archives on Audio when we will decide just exactly how it is that we're going to go ahead and do that. What I am going to do right now is I'm going to give you a rundown, briefly, of what it is that we're going to be talking about on tonight's program. First of all, as we launch into the main body of the program, I'm going to review ever so briefly, as much as I can, or as briefly as I can, the December surprise scenario. It is a complex one. That is one of the reasons why I am sticking to the documentation, as pedantic as this is, and it is pedantic. Still, I think that when you're dealing with something which is as complex and as provocative as the December surprise scenario, I think it is very, very important that a researcher and an investigator remain as close to the source material as possible. Also, I think it is essential that other people in a position to look into this material get a hold of this documentation, whether in print or by tape. So what we're going to be doing this evening is reading information in to the archives, information dealing with the P2 Lodge, the Iran-Contra scandal, and in particular the crash of an Arrow Air plane in Gander, Newfoundland in December of 1985, which killed some 248 U.S. GIs. We will be talking about that at great length and in detail this evening. However, the first thing we're going to look at, by way of not only offering a transition between last week's broadcast and this week's, but also by way of anticipating the excellent article from Europeo magazine that Dave, our Italian translator, has gleaned for us. We're going to begin by reviewing an article with which we concluded last week's broadcast, an article from La Repubblica of August 15th of 1990, talking about Arif Durrani of or connected to Arrow Air, and the P2 Lodge, the Iran-Contra scandal, Stefano Della Chiai, a long-time subject of One Step Beyond. And we will be reading this by way of looking backward to last week's broadcast and ahead to the duration of tonight's. Then we're going to take a look at a couple of articles pointing out inconsistencies in the official version of an investigation into the Gander Newfoundland crash of the Arrow airplane, one from the LA Times of approximately a year ago, and the other from the San Francisco Chronicle of a week or so ago, specifically Wednesday, December 5th. The other one is from December 12th of 1989. We will then read into the archives formally an excellent article which we have featured a couple of times in the past that has never been entered into the archives, but this is a magnificent article researched for us once again by Dave, our Italian translator. It comes from the South Florida Business Journal and deals with Arrow Air and its connections to not only the Iran-Contra scandal and the CIA, but also to Arif Durrani, D-U-R-R-A-N-I, a Pakistani-born weapons expert, and apparently a key player in the Iran-Contra scandal. We're then going to look at another very important article I have received, and this is to our listenership's credit, not only the Bay Area listenership, but the listenership around the country. I've received a number of copies of a very important article called Crash Burn Cover-Up. It's by Joe Connison, who normally writes for the Village Voice. This comes from Details Magazine, and I'm going to read large sections of it into the record. Although Details does not usually feature political information, they sure did this time, and it's a really, really magnificent article. We're going to take a look at Arrow Air, the Gander crash, and in particular, we're going to take a look at the observations of a former Criminal Investigative Division investigator for the U.S. Army, a fellow named Gene Wheaton, an individual who has provided a lot of information to the Christic Institute in their ongoing investigation. And Gene Wheaton has become convinced that not only was the Gander crash the result of terrorism, but that it is directly connected to Arrow Air's involvement in the Iran-Contra scandal. And we're going to take a look at large sections of this Details magazine, many details of this Details magazine article in tonight's broadcast by way of reading it into the record. I'm then going to review a section from the Pan Am 103 Insurance Investigators report that we looked at last week, and specifically we're going to take a look at Manzer El-Kassar and his work in shipping both arms to Iran for the CIA and the Iran, or a section thereof, in the Iran-Contra scandal, and also weapons to the Contras. And we're going to speculate about a possible scenario in terms of the Gander crash and a possible, and note the use of the term possible, link between Gander and the Pan Am 103 bombing. This is by no means a firm connection. In fact, it would have to be termed, I think, a path of inquiry. But certainly there are some provocative questions that the Pan Am 103 insurance investigators report, as well as Details magazine and some of the observations of Gene Wheaton, raise concerning the possibility of a connection between Pan Am 103 and the Arrow air crash in Gander in December of 85. I guess for our purposes here, we could refer to the Gander crash as December Surprise 2, even though it occurred previously in time. After that, after taking a look at this, reviewing some short segments from the Pan Am 103 Insurance Investigators Report that we looked at last week, we're going to launch into a magnificent article that I have already spoken about this evening, and we're going to read the entire thing into the record. This article is as important a piece of work as I have ever seen, and the number of connections it touches on really serve in many ways as an overview of the many subjects covered here on One Step Beyond that over the years, and by the late, great Mabe Russell for many years before me, these many paths of inquiry are now flowing together in a very important way and a very revealing way, and nothing is more revealing of these connections than this critically, critically important article from Europeo Magazine, or L'Europeo Magazine, of August 25th of 1990. This was researched for us and translated for us by Dave, and this article in many ways will not only serve as a highlight and the main feature of tonight's broadcast, but it also serves to highlight and underscore many of the points that have been made in the past here on One Step Beyond, notably in Radio Free America shows 17 through 21, dealing with the propaganda Douay Lodge and the Iran and the shooting of the Pope. Also, Radio Free America shows 32 and 34 deal specifically with P2 connections to the Iran-Contra scandal. We will then review an article which we looked at briefly last week in the conclusion of the broadcast, dealing with allegations by a former CIA operative who goes under the name of Ibrahim Razin, allegations that in fact the P2 was connected to the bombing of Pan Am 103 in order to cover up its involvement in the Iranian arms traffic. So we will be reviewing that briefly. I don't know how much there is to this particular connection, but certainly there are certain evidentiary tributaries running between the P2 connection to Iran-Contra and the Pan Am 103 bombing, whether or not this information here is accurate and whether or not there is a direct connection. And we will conclude tonight's broadcast by looking at some fascinating quotes. So once again, that last article, by the way, also researched and translated for us by Dave. And then we will take a look at some more information, which comes to us from Dave, who is not only doing work in Italian, he also is learning German and is increasingly developing his capabilities at translating and researching from the German press for us as well. He has taken a look at some excellent information. He has obtained for us some excellent information from and about Gerhard Mertens, the fellow who founded Merex, a major arms trafficking firm and West German intelligence front, which figures not only in aspects of the Manzer El-Kassar Aria deal, but the Mertens-Merex operation, in turn going back to Otto Skorzeny, is in turn connected to the P2, the strategy of tension, and many of the things that we have looked at in the past. We looked at some of those connections last week in a review of a section of Radio Free America 32. We will ruminate about them again this evening. So that, in a nutshell, is what we have on tap for this evening. I'm going to take another short musical break. Gird your loins, because we're about to go directly into the main body of tonight's broadcast. Get your tape recorders running, because the text and detailed ancillary discussion will follow. It's time now to begin the prepared portion of tonight's broadcast, the archival update both of, I guess you could say, the December surprise and the inclusion of the formulation of what, for lack of a better term, we might call December Surprise 2. The crash of the Arrow airplane in Gander, Newfoundland in December of 85 that killed some 250 or so American soldiers. This crash is certainly similar in certain respects to the Pan Am 103 bombing, related to in certain respects the Pan Am 103 bombing, and perhaps directly connected to the Pan Am 103 bombing. We will look into that this evening. Now, before I do that, I want to review ever so briefly the December surprise hypothesis that I have formulated originally in December of, or really in January 8th and 15th of 1989, What that basically does, and by the way, that is included in the archives as the December Surprise, The Politics of Terror and the Exoneration of the Secret Team, that is now Radio Free America 35. I replayed the original broadcast from 1-8 and 1-15-89 a couple of weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago to be precise. Now, what that scenario involves basically is a combination of elimination and intimidation to get the charges against Oliver North dismissed. Basically, conspiracy charges against former White House aide Oliver North were dismissed largely because documents that had been requested by the special prosecutor Lawrence Walsh for North's defense, primarily, or at least in part, documents pertaining to the Aria deal and Manzar El-Kassar, or brokered by Manzar El-Kassar, those documents were not released by President Reagan. And it is my feeling that the Pan Am 103 bombing helped to ensure that those documents would not be released. The fact that those documents could not be obtained by the special counsel warranted the dismissal of charges against Oliver North. That is covered in Radio Free America 35, the original December Surprise broadcast. It should be known, it should be noted that the scenario, the working hypothesis that I have presented and am developing, involves the elimination of people that might have provided information to Oliver North, to the investigation into Oliver North and the Iran-Contra scandal, chiefly the death of Amiram Nir Niskar, a North and George Bush associate in the Iran-Contra activities. His death on in December of 1988 in a plane crash in Mexico, that reported in the American Popular Press on December 2nd of 1988. The same day, the two other very important stories appeared in the American press. One was President Reagan's decision, former President Reagan's decision not to release certain documents requested by the special prosecutor for national security reasons. That very same day, for Rudolph Giuliani, former U.S. Attorney Rudolph Giuliani, presented led the bust of so-called Pizza Connection 4, as it was termed at the time. The many investigations devolving out of the Pizza Connection case, or cases, have now intersected directly with the Iran-Contra scandal. I first proposed that in Radio Free America program number 29. Later, in some addenda to Radio Free America 34, specifically dealing with the Sherkarki AG case, the hard connections of Pizza Connection to not only the P2 Lodge, elements grouped around Stibom, an arms for drugs ring we will be touching on this evening, but a number of other things, connections between the Pope shooting, the Iran-Contra scandal, the Pizza Connection cases, those emerged in a big, big way in the Sherkarki AG case. That can be obtained as an addendum. The Sherkarki AG case is an addendum to Radio Free America 34. The December Surprise hypothesis involves also intimidation. It is my feeling that when people who were involved in the Iran-Contra scandal or people who had information about it saw not only what happened to Amiram Nir Niskar, but when they observed what happened to the McKee team, which as we looked at last week and as we have looked at in the past, the McKee team, a group of Army and CIA counterterror specialists on special assignment for CIA, they were victims of Pan Am 103, the bombing in December of 88, and the handling of that particular aspect of the case has been very strange, to say the least. Some extraordinary security procedures were taken by CIA personnel at the site of the crash, to ensure that the information gleaned by the McKee team in Lebanon would not become public knowledge. Apparently, the McKee team had been looking into, among other things, Manzar El-Kassar and his connections to U.S. intelligence and his role in not only at least ostensibly helping to obtain the release of U.S. hostages, but also providing arms to the both the Iranian and Contra ends of the Iran-Contra scandal. It is also apparent that the CIA faction working with Manzar El-Kassar was aiding and abetting not only his drug smuggling activities, but also his terrorist support activities as well. So basically, December Surprise involves elimination and intimidation. Intimidation by the death of Amiram Nir Niskar, intimidation by the death of the McKee team, intimidation both. But intimidation also, I should say, by the Pizza Connection bust, because a lot of people who might have had information to disclose would have been jeopardized by a full investigation into the Pizza Connection bust, and a lot of tongues must have been silenced when that particular case went down. Again, Pizza Connection 4 bust, the death of Niskar, and the decision by Reagan not to release documents to Lawrence Walsh all emerged in the press on December 2nd. December 4th, It was revealed that there were extensive documents in the U.S. National Security Archives dealing with Amiram Nir-Nisker's cooperation with Oliver North in counterterror activities in calendar years 85 and 86. Those were very, very fateful years, and among others, Abu Nidal, Abu Abbas, and their mutual associate, Manzer al-Kassar, were figured prominently in the terrorist activities during that period of time. There is a very fine line between, quote, counter-terror and terrorism, and that ambiguous line has been a major focus of this broadcast over the years, and it figures very prominently in the Iran-Contra scandal in its various phases as well. The December surprise scenario involves also elimination. Obviously, any information that might have come to the investigation from the documents Walsh had requested would not be released. It was my hypothesis, and I think that that hypothesis looks better and better, that the bombing of Pan Am 103 helped see to it that those documents would remain buried, because they then became central to the various terrorist connections which were being implicated in the bombing of Pan Am 103. That information, therefore, became central to a national security investigation and had to have been kept secret. Beyond that, any information that either Nisker or the McKee team might have provided to the investigation obviously was eliminated, both by the crash of Amiram Nir-Nisker's plane as well as, obviously, the bombing of Pan Am 103. For practical purposes, for conceptual purposes, the Pan Am 103 bombing per se, which is the central element of the December surprise hypothesis, although not the entire thing by any means, but the Pan Am 103 bombing might be thought of for our purposes as sort of an airborne Lapenka bombing. Now, one of the things that we have focused on, and one of the major elements in the Iran-Contra scandal, and obviously also the Christic Institute suit against many of the key players in that scandal, is the bombing at Lapenka in Costa Rica of the headquarters of Eden Pastora. Now, Eden Pastora, for those people who might be new to this information, was a hero, one of the players in the Sandinista revolution against Anastasio Somoza. And the Sandinistas, of course, overthrew Anastasio Somoza, a U.S. puppet, as his father had been before him. And Eden Pastora had been one of the military leaders, one of the popular leaders of that particular revolution. He then broke with the Sandinista government and began conducting his own war, or a portion of the military activities being conducted against the Sandinistas. He refused, however, Eden Pastora refused, however, to merge his forces with the CIA umbrella organization overseeing the rest of the Contra elements, the Contra rebels fighting against the Sandinistas, because the key leaders in the CIA-sponsored Contra organization were former Somocistas. Basically, they were among the most brutal exponents of and lieutenants of former dictator Somoza in his years-long oppression of the Nicaraguan people. And because of the brutality of these individuals and the enormous distaste that that created on the part of the Nicaraguan people for the Somocistas, Eden Pastora refused to cooperate with them militarily or politically. The CIA was pressuring Eden Pastora to merge his forces with those of the CIA-sponsored Contras. Pastora refused to do that, and so it then became, in the minds of many of the key people in the Contra support effort, necessary to do a couple of things. First of all, they wanted to eliminate Eden Pastora, who was viewed as a loose cannon, and so in order to do that, and also to generate bad publicity and on the part of media representatives concerning the Sandinistas, the Lapenka scenario was developed. Now, basically, Pastora was having a news conference at Lapenka, and a number of key representatives of various media voices from around the world, and in particular relatively liberal American media voices in particular, were present at that conference. A fellow who was operating under the name of Per Anker Hansen, supposedly a Danish journalist, and who appears to have been actually, in fact, a Libyan explosives expert named Amak Galil, planted a bomb at the Lapenka conference, which blew up simply due to circumstance. That bomb did not kill Eden Pastora or nearly as many people as it was supposed to have. Apparently the bomb was not placed properly or was knocked over. It certainly wreaked a lot of havoc, but that bomb was intended to do a couple of things. At greater length here in just a second. Now, once again, the bombing at La Penca. And by the way, the Costa Rican government has indicted John Hull for that bombing. John Hull is currently in Nicaragua. There has been discussion of possible Costa Rican attempts to prevail on the Nicaraguan government to extradite John Hull to stand trial on these charges. It remains to be seen what will happen. But the La Penca bombing involved a couple of things. Not only eliminating the troublesome, from the CIA standpoint, Eden Pastora, but also by blaming this particular crime, this bombing, this terrorist incident on the Sandinistas, and also the resulting deaths of a number of journalists, it was hoped that this would generate bad media publicity for the Sandinistas, because many of the people involved in the Contra support effort felt that the media were being too kind to the Sandinistas and way too harsh on the Contras. And the La Penca scenario was worked out basically to help... I guess you could say provoke media reaction. The La Penca bombing was basically a provocation. It was initially blamed in this country on the Sandinistas, although all the evidence now points to the Contras and their supporters in the United States, specifically Ali North, John Hull, and company. One of the journalists wounded in La Penca was, of course, Tony Avergan, and along with his wife, Martha Honey, they, along with the Christic Institute, have now filed suit against many of the key players in the Iran-Contra scandal. That Christic Institute suit has been a major focus of these broadcasts over the years, and it has been my privilege and our privilege to work with the Christic Institute, both Marlena Smith and Lanny Sintkin, Sarah Nelson, and, of course, Dan Sheehan, who has graced our airwaves a couple of times here in the last couple of months. The Pan Am 103 bombing can be thought of, for our purposes, as sort of an airborne La Penca, just as the La Penca bombing was meant to eliminate the troublesome Eden Pastora, as well as provoking negative media reaction against the Sandinistas, who were blamed for the crime. A similar scenario unfolds vis-a-vis Pan Am 103. Pan Am 103, in addition to eliminating the very troublesome McKee team, because they had found out about the active cooperation between Manzer El-Kassar, a key terrorist and drug dealer, and U.S. intelligence, they had a lot of information vis-a-vis his work for U.S. intelligence, apparently. They were eliminated. The troublesome McKee team was eliminated. A number of other people were eliminated on that flight as well. We will talk about that in weeks to come. We have spoken about that in the past. Among the people eliminated were a fellow named Michael Bernstein, who had done some work for the Office of Special Investigations looking into Nazi war criminals and their activities in the United States and on behalf of U.S. intelligence after World War II. Some of those connections in terms of the Marex-Mertens-Scorzani connection are implicated in the Iran-Contra scandal many, many years after the original importation of these Nazi intelligencers, chiefly under the auspices of Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence for the Eastern Front. Gehlen, his files, and most of his key operatives became in turn, as we have seen so often in the past, the CIA's Department of Russian and Eastern European Affairs, the de facto NATO intelligence organization, and eventually they went on to become the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the West German Intelligence Service, which it is to this day. Many of the youngest operatives in the World War II period, or the post-World War II period, people who were 23, 24, 25 years old and veterans of World War II and the Hitler Youth, they are now senior operatives in BND at this time, and are also, many of them are officially retired, but still serving in a somewhat active capacity. Those connections, in my opinion, were one of the reasons why Michael Bernstein was eliminated, because the continued investigation into the importation of Nazis, into our Nazi collaborators, into our intelligence system, will reveal some very important connections which are only too current to this day. Even though World War II seems like a long time ago, bear in mind that George Bush fought in World War II. A lot of people who are very important on the contemporary political scene were active at the World War II period, and as we have looked at in so many of our archive shows, the groundwork for the activities that we're looking at today really began pre-World War II. Ultimately, if you look at the forces behind the Third Reich and the other fascist countries, one comes to multinational corporations and financiers, and many of the dominant elements in the multinational corporate scene today, which affect our lives very directly. That's one of the reasons why these broadcasts represent a continuum going back all the way to events in the immediate post-World War I period and stretching forward in, as I say, a very important, albeit ghastly, historical continuum right on up to the misdeeds of the Iran-Contra scenario. So again, Pan Am 103 can be thought of for our purposes as sort of an airborne La Penca, and we've taken a look at a lot of information implicating the complicity of elements of U.S. intelligence in the Pan Am 103 bombing. The word complicity should be noted here because many of the people actually operating at the functional level, at the operational level in many of these terrorist incidents are themselves sincere fanatics, but the compromising of security to allow them to perform their activities, the arming and training of many of these terrorists, is the responsibility, at least to a certain extent, of elements, and note the use of the term elements, of U.S. intelligence. It is also quite obvious that there are other elements, such as the late unfortunate McKee team, that are opposed to these kinds of activities. Those elements often wind up opposing them at their own peril or destruction. The McKee team, Colonel Higgins, William Buckley, a CIA counterterror official, appear to have been among the victims of other elements of U.S. intelligence which actively cooperate with some of the terrorists in the currently plaguing the world. So, again, the Pan Am 103 bombing could be thought of as an airborne lapenka for conceptual purposes for people that are attempting to conceptualize this massive body and admittedly very complex working hypothesis that I've been presenting over the last couple of years or so. What we're going to begin with this evening is by taking a look at an article which we read last week, and this also, as has so many of the articles over the years and in tonight's broadcast, this comes to us courtesy of Dave, our Italian translator, and he got this particular article from La Repubblica of August 15th of 1990. I'm going to read it briefly, and this will serve by way of introduction to tonight's broadcast. This article reads, "The magazine L'Europea will publish a report in its next issue on the arms traffic to Iran and on an arms-for-drugs exchange plan in which Italy was involved. The article asserts that a decisive role in this affair was played by the P2 Masonic Lodge of Licio Gelli. The report contains an interview with Arif Durrani, A-R-I-F as his first name, D-U-R-R-A-N-I, his second, one of the chief figures of the affair, who was supposed to, quote, direct the money for the purchase of armaments, unquote. And quoting Durrani, "My Iranian friends," asserts Durrani, "told me that the P2 had been in contact with them since the end of 1981 with this plan, drugs in exchange for arms, if they don't have enough money," unquote. According to Durrani, many loads of munitions left Italian ports for Bandar Abbas. Quote, "I have proof of the intermediation carried on for the purchase of 30,000 Beretta machine pistols from Pakistan," unquote. On the subject of the arms traffic between Italy and Iran, Durrani made reference to Stefano Della Chiai, who, quote, "represented the point of contact between the P2 and Tehran," unquote. In the interview, Durrani asserted that Della Chiai, quote, "was very close to Ayatollah Montazeri," unquote, and that he had an office at the Intercontinental Hotel and, quote, "acted as the representative for some Italian companies," unquote. Well, many of the names that are carried in this brief article here are names which have occupied a massive position in the archives and on One Step Beyond over the many years. Once again, Radio Free America shows 17 through 21 dealing with the Pope shooting, the Vatican banking scandals, and related topics go into the propaganda Douay Lodge and the doings of Messrs. Licio Gelli and Stefano Della Chiai in great detail. In particular, I alert listeners to Radio Free America 19 vis-a-vis Mr. Della Chiai and his relationship to Licio Gelli. Now, the P2 Lodge is basically a bogus Masonic lodge in Italy. It is a Masonic lodge, but rather than being involved with civic activities, it has served as a front not only for intelligence activities. Many of its key players are very much involved, many of the key members very much involved with NATO and Italian intelligence. But in addition, the P2 Lodge has basically functioned through its connections to Italian intelligence and the Super Seismi group within Italian intelligence that we spoke about in Radio Free America's 19 and 21. The P2 Lodge has basically served as sort of a crypto-fascist government running Italy for over the years. It also has very, very strong connections to other countries, notably Argentina, and last but most assuredly not least, the United States. A fellow named Philip Guarino, who was involved with the Republican Ethnic Heritage Council and who was dismissed from that council, at least temporarily, in the 1988 campaign when that council came into focus due to articles by, among others, Russ Ballant, a Detroit journalist and reporter, or investigator, I should say. Phil Guarino was among the fascist sympathizers and collaborators. Actually, I shouldn't call him a fascist sympathizer and collaborator. He is listed as an honorary member of the P2, at least in the book St. Peter's Banker by Luigi D'Afonso that we looked at in Radio Free America's 19 and 21. But Phil Guarino, in his connections to P2, warranted his dismissal from the Republic Ethnic Heritage Council, which contained a number of active fascist collaborators, some of them with very strong ties to not only the war crimes of the World War II period, but elements like the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, a key element of the World Anti-Communist League, or the former World Anti-Communist League. I think it's now, it's been renamed, I've forgotten what its new name is, something like the World League for Democracy and Freedom, or some other unlikely moniker, basically. If there's anything that the former World Anti-Communist League is not interested in, is promoting freedom or democracy. On the contrary, over the years, its activities have been directed fundamentally against both freedom and democracy. It is a fascist institution and one of the most destructive elements on the contemporary world scene. We've spoken about World Anti-Communist League in a two-part Radio Free America series, Radio Free America shows 14 and 15. It also is the subject of a book we have looked at in the past, the book called Inside the League by John Lee and Scott Anderson, goes into many of these fascist connections. So, Phil Guarino of the P2, an individual or honorary P2 member, a direct link between the Bush administration and the P2, although George Bush, Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, and others connected not only to P2 in general, but specifically to Licio Gelli, former Oberleutnant in the SS and Mussolini associate. Licio Gelli, an individual with, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard, the head of P2 and a very, very important player on the world scene. Now, another key name here, and we're going to be going into many of these connections as we read the entire Europeo article into the record later in the program. Take note of Arif Durrani here, D-U-R-R-A-N-I. He was an individual who we took a look at briefly last week in the section of Radio Free America program number 32, the fourth broadcast in a seven-part and ongoing Radio Free America series dealing with the Iran-Contra scandal. Durrani had a company called Merex, an arms trafficking firm, which may or may not be connected to the Merex founded by Gerhard Mertens, a World War II associate of Otto Skorzeny, SS colonel and later CIA operative under the auspices of the Galen Organization. We have looked at Skorzeny, Mertens, Merex, and we will be looking at Merex and talking about it later in the broadcast. Merex was utilized by Manzer El-Kassar in the Iria deal, as we reviewed last week and as we saw originally in Radio Free America 32. And Merex is also figured in connection with the P2 Lodge and BND activities in financing P2-related terror. And also, Merex figures in the connection with the third position, the fascist third position, the fascist third position was the focus of a two-part miscellaneous archive series available from Archives on Audio under that particular title. We will be talking about the third position later on in the broadcast. One of the major players in the third position, along with the related strategy of tension, the aforementioned Stefano Della Chiai, the strategy of tension in a nutshell, and both Lapenka and the December surprise could be considered manifestations of the strategy of tension philosophy. The strategy of tension involved the setting up of terrorist incidents to be blamed on the left in order to basically make political hay for the right. The strategy of tension figures in the context of provocation, the setting up of an incident to be blamed on one's opponents in order to justify reaction against them. We have spoken about provocation in terms of a justification for military adventurism abroad. We have also spoken about provocation in the context of warranting the restriction of civil liberties and broader police powers at home in order to combat the terrorist menace. We will be talking about the strategy of tension and the P2 Lodge Stefano Della Chiai in weeks to come in connection with Operation Gladio, a critically important link between NATO, terrorism, quote, counterterrorism, the P2, and the CIA that we have touched on in the past. We will be focusing on Operation Gladio, which was discussed, although the name Operation Gladio had not come to light when the original Radio Free America series dealing with P2 and the Pope shooting number 17 through 21 was done in May of 1986. But many of those activities, the Operation Gladio activities, were a primary focus of that very important series. And by way of supplementing the information in RFAs 17 through 21, Operation Gladio and the strategy of tension will be focused on, will be gone into in weeks to come here on One Step Beyond. But Arif Durrani was an individual who, despite denials by the authorities, was apparently a very key player in the Iran-Contra scandal, specifically an individual very much involved with bringing weapons to the Iranian government in order to help finance the Contra war. He appears to know a great deal about what is going on vis-a-vis the Iran-Contra scandal and related activities. And Arif Durrani, as we will be looking at this evening, is what has been very closely connected with Arrow Air. Now, Arrow Air was an airline which apparently was doing a lot of the dirty work for, not the dirty work, perhaps, that's not quite the right word, at least not the dirtiest work. Some of the dirtiest work is being done by people like Manzar Al-Kassar and company. But Arrow Air was very much involved in the arms transfers, both to Iran and to the Contras, that figured so prominently in the Iran-Contra scandal. Those arms transfers and the related drug traffic and terrorist activities basically constitute the Iran-Contra scandal. Arif Durrani, very much connected to Arrow Air, and Arrow Air is the airline that one of whose planes was involved in the Gander crash. In December of 1985, specifically I believe it was December 12th of 1985, an Arrow Air plane returning home to the United States, yes it was December 12th, the Arrow Air plane crashed in Gander, Newfoundland, killing some 248 American soldiers. No, actually it says here 256 American soldiers. Anyway, those GIs died in this particular crash, although Islamic Jihad, one of the Iranian-connected terrorist groups operating in the Middle East and Lebanon in particular, took credit for blowing up that plane. This claim met with repeated and heated official denials, and to this day, at least officially, that crash has been ruled an accident due to icing of the wings in all probability. That scenario does not appear to be holding very much water, let alone ice. I guess you could say the ice is melting from that particular scenario as the heat gets turned on. And there is an increasing body of evidence indicating that not only was the crash of the Arrow airplane in Gander, Newfoundland, not an accident, but probably the result of a terrorist incident, but that terrorist incident may indeed have been very centrally involved, that terrorist incident may have been connected to the Iran-Contra scandal. It is now quite apparent, and we will be documenting tonight, that Arrow Air was centrally involved in the Iran-Contra arms transactions. And we will take a look at indications that some of those transactions, perhaps transactions gone awry and related activities, were behind the sabotage, the apparent sabotage of the Gander Newfoundland plane, of this Arrow Air plane. We're going to begin the discussion of the Gander crash by reviewing an article that we have read on past One Step Beyond shows. This particular article has not been entered into the archives in the past. Reading now from the Los Angeles Times of Tuesday, December 12th of 1989. This particular article was written by Douglas France, F-R-A-N-T-Z, of the Los Angeles Times. Did I say New York Times? This is Los Angeles Times of December 12th, Tuesday, December 12th of 1989. A Douglas France, L.A. Times writer. This particular article is Dateline Washington and headlined, House Panel Investigating 1985 Crash That Killed 248. A House panel has opened an investigation into the mystery surrounding the fiery crash of a chartered plane in Canada that killed 248 U.S. soldiers and 8 crew members 4 years ago today. That's where I got the 248 figure. The other article we're going to read says 256. I don't know what the correct figure is, but I don't think it makes too much difference at this point. Certainly 250 or so American GIs died in this crash. Beginning again. A House panel has opened an investigation into the mystery surrounding the fiery crash of a chartered plane in Canada that killed 248 U.S. soldiers and 8 crew members 4 years ago today. So the 256 and obviously includes the 8 crew members. Skipping down on the story, the inquiry by the House Judiciary Committee's Subcommittee on Crime, chaired by Representative William J. Hughes, Democrat of New Jersey, represents the first official attempt by a U.S. body to find the cause of the worst air disaster in American military history. Quote, I don't know what happened, but I am convinced that from the beginning, our government and the Canadian government wanted to steer things away from terrorism and to a preconceived notion of ice on the wings, unquote, said Representative Robin Tallon, T-A-L-L-O-N, Democrat of South Carolina, who says U.S. authorities have not investigated the crash properly. The flight, operated by Miami-based Arrow Air, was en route to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, from Cairo, Egypt, via Cologne, West Germany, and Gander. The plane was carrying members of the 101st Airborne, an elite army unit that had been on a 6-month United Nations peacekeeping mission in the Sinai Desert. After refueling at Gander on the morning of December 12, 1985, the plane crashed while trying to take off and burned for 23 hours about half a mile from the end of the runway. Everyone on board was killed. The Canadian board said it was unable to determine the exact sequence of events that led to the crash. but the Mord's majority concluded that the most probable cause was ice on the wings. The report released 2 years ago said those aboard died in the fire that broke out upon impact. It said evidence did not support the occurrence of a fire or explosion before impact. Four board members issued an unusual dissent that said that ice was not a factor and that a fire broke out on board while the aircraft was in flight. The dissenting theory cited eyewitness reports that the plane was in flames before it struck the ground and said two men who refueled the plane testified that they saw no ice on the wings. That last sentence again. The dissenting theory cited eyewitness reports that the plane was in flames before it struck the ground and said two men who refueled the plane testified that they saw no ice on the wings. Two dissenting board members, aeronautical engineer Lester T. Silotas, or actually it's listed here as Philotas, F-I-L-O-T-A-S. Another article we're going to look at says S-I-L-O-T-A-S. I don't know which the truth is. Anyway, two dissenting board members, aeronautical engineer Lester T. Silotas and former Air Canada pilot Ross Stevenson, were interviewed Monday by the subcommittee staff. Both men said they disagree categorically with the theory that ice caused the crash and feel additional investigation is warranted, according to a source close to the subcommittee. Well, that from December 12th of 1989, the LA Times, as I said. And moving ahead almost exactly a year in time, we move to now December 5th of 1990, December 5th of this year. And by the way, for the benefit of those who hear this on tape, this program is being recorded on the evening of December 16th of 1990. This is an article, an AP story quite specifically, about the investigation, the House Judiciary Subcommittee investigation into the Gander crash. And this particular article, again, an AP story, Dateline Washington, is headlined, Gander Crash Probe Bungled, Panel Told. The U.S. and Canadian governments bungled the probe of a crash that killed 256 American servicemen and may be concealing a possible terrorist connection, according to testimony before a congressional panel yesterday. Representative Robin Tallon, T-A-L-L-O-N, Democrat of South Carolina, told the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime that federal agencies appear to be guilty of, quote, ineptness or the best contrived cover-up ever, unquote, in the December 12, 1985 crash in Gander, Newfoundland. The DC-8, carrying U.S. peacekeeping troops home from the Middle East, crashed less than 30 seconds after takeoff. Quote, incredibly, no U.S. government agency, or at least none with official responsibility, demonstrated any determination to find out just what caused the crash, unquote, said Subcommittee Chairman William Hughes, Democrat of New Jersey. Again, quoting, the National Transportation Safety Board and other agencies of the U.S. government chose to sit back and watch as the Canadian efforts became embroiled in controversy, Hughes said. The NTSB routinely rubber-stamped the Canadian findings, unquote. The Canadian investigation said the probable cause of the crash was ice on the wings of the chartered military jet. A subcommittee staff report that formed the basis for yesterday's hearing said there was no evidence that either the United States or Canada had seriously investigated possible terrorism. Eyewitnesses say they saw a bright orange object in the sky at the time of the crash, suggesting that the plane was on fire. An anonymous caller later said that Islamic Jihad, a pro-Iranian terrorist group, had put a bomb on the plane. The man who piloted the plane on the first leg of its journey to Cairo, Egypt, told the FBI that he believes it experienced structural failure or that a bomb exploded on takeoff. The pilot also told the FBI that the Egyptian Army Guard assigned to the plane while it was on the ground disappeared from his post several times. The FBI and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, quote, found very serious allegations, unquote, but that information apparently was not turned over to the Canadian panel investigating the crash, Tallon said. So, curious discrepancies here. The testimony by two people who had serviced the plane while it was on the ground that there was no ice on the wings. Eyewitness accounts that the plane was apparently on fire before it crashed. The official account says that the fire broke out after and as a result of the crash. Plus the curious fact that the Egyptian guard assigned to guard the plane in Egypt disappeared from his post several times raised questions about this particular investigation. We will look at some forensic pathological evidence which further casts doubt on the official version of the Gander crash. Certainly this was a very tragic event, and obviously a lot of U.S. servicemen as well as the crew lost their lives. And there are indications, as I said, and we will be going into these right now, that the crash of this Arrow airplane may very well have been connected to the Iran-Contra scandal. Certainly, if this particular crash was not connected to the Iran-Contra scandal, Arrow Air's activities were. And we're going to take a look at the Arrow Air activities and their and Arrow Air's involvement with the Iran-Contra scandal. And we will also be introducing in depth a key player in tonight's broadcast, Arif Durrani, in the following article. Now, once again, research credit on this goes to Dave, our Italian translator, who gleaned this particular article for us from the South Florida Business Journal of April 16th of 1990. It's a very important story, and I'm going to read the entire article, or almost the entire article, into the archives this evening.